Mayday.
Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. We're not worthy of being on Skype, but Skype is still here. Planes are still in the air. ATMs are still distributing money. Dogs are not lying down with cats yet. Not just yet. But anyway, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the fundage, you know where, 2051 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The operator is standing by. And we've got with us Paul Stevenson. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Patrick.
Okay. So here we are. By the way, I was a few minutes ago, I checked out Jake Shields' Twitter feed, which I don't really do Twitter because I don't know how, but I do follow Jake Shields, who interviewed Dr. Duke last November, and I got to meet Jake Shields, a good guy, martial artist. And he had a post about fires in Jerusalem, and apparently Israel is asking neighboring countries to help it put out the fires. And Jake Shields, of course, made the cryptic comment that hasn't Israel bombed all its neighboring countries? So anyway, there you go.
Well, this is what, you know, you go around bombing all your neighbors and then you only ask them for help, you know what I mean?
Little boy who cried wolf, not exactly, but.
But, you know, there are good, there are Jewish brethren, you know, love thy neighbor like yourself. I'm pretty sure it says that. Maybe it says bomb them to, and you know, into oblivion. Does it say that? I don't think it does.
I think in their reading of the scripture, it's bomb thy neighbor as you imagine they would do unto you.
Yeah,
with the emphasis on the word imagine.
Yeah, or at least you can. Through self-deception, you might convince yourself that that's what's going to happen so that you can, I guess, have some attempt to be able to look yourself in the mirror. Those people, I don't care. Like people like Smotrich and Ben Gavir and people like that, I mean, they're just human garbage. You know, and I have to laugh at their eschatological system. It really is retarded, you know. It is quite frankly retarded. You know, they take these passages in the Old Testament with absolutely zero relevance to anything that would be happening today in, you know, the early 21st century. I mean, these people just talk about cherry picking scriptures. Anything that involves, that they think involves, you know, oh, we got the Lord on our side. And here, look, there's eight passages here where we're supposed to kill everybody. Yeah, we like those passages. What about all the other ones? Not so much. We'll take these, but we'll leave out these ones. But anyway, that's another story. I don't think Israel's long for this world. I mean, you can't, you know, you reap what you sow. I mean, you mentioned a more extreme example. You mentioned a more extreme example of, you know, they're asking their neighbors for help. I mean, like you said, I mean, these people have bombed just about everybody in the vicinity. And then there's some wildfires. I think it might even be beyond Jerusalem. I don't know how they started or what, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm sure everybody's in a mad rush to help the Israelis. Like I said, they not only don't love their neighbors, but they bomb them and threaten them, and of course they probably were responsible for this attack in Iran as well. Now, the Iranians, I suppose, to keep face and to avoid having to respond, the Iranians, you know, have tried to minimize or dismiss the idea that it was an Israeli operation, but it seems a little bit of a coincidence to me that fuel that's used for propulsion of missiles, that there's a massive attack on a depot, and it's got nothing to do with the Israelis in this current climate.
Honestly,
sell me a bridge.
I think the downing of the helicopter or the crash of the helicopter of President Raisi, was that a summer a year ago? Or was that 2 years ago? That's hard for me to remember. Was that 2 years? That seemed pretty suspicious to me. And no. I'm not satisfied that that was simply, I don't know what happened. But the thing that you've got is Israel absolutely wants a war, and or the Israeli government, the current Israeli government, and nobody else outside some freaky Americans who are beholden to the Likud wing of the Israel lobby, if you want to put it that way. Nobody else wants it. And so Israel's doing all these massive provocations, and Iran doesn't want to be provoked. And so, you know, it may very well just say, oh, it was a helicopter crash, you know, poor helicopter maintenance. It was negligence at the port, because they don't want to be cornered into a war. Somebody they don't want. Right. Because, you know, even if they're to emerge victorious in the war, you know, like, for instance, if you're going down the street and there's some crazy homeless person, do you necessarily want to tangle with the like he might insult you? Do you necessarily want to get into a fight where, you know, maybe you could beat the crap out of him, but in the course of it, you know, he could like gouge your eye or something? Is that really worth it to you? And I think that's kind of where Iran's at. And I just want to repeat what I said. Sometimes, you know, I say things just off the top of my head, and then I think, hey, that was pretty good. Do unto others as you imagine they would do unto you. And I really think that is the Jewish mindset, and they're very paranoid. And when you mix the paranoia with that mindset, you get, I mean, I've heard people say, you know, well, there's no point in us being nice to the goyim, because, you know, they hate us anyway. Even if we don't screw them, they're still going to hate us. So we might as well screw them.
Well, there's no evidence for that. I mean, you know, particularly today, I think people, you know, unlike centuries gone by, you could argue because of the cultural pressure, because of the post-World War II narrative and the Holocaust and all of that. But everyone goes out of their way to, you know, be nice to Jews and not leave themselves open to being called an anti-Semite. I mean, there is nothing worse than called an anti-Semite. I mean, you don't want to be literally Hitler. Like we said, it's always 1930 as well. It's always the 1930s. And there's always a new Hitler on the horizon. Well, you know, when it comes to avoiding wars, you can't be getting involved in appeasement. But, you know, everybody goes out of their way. There's no evidence for that. You know, I mean, who's nasty to Jews? I mean, they rape and pillage, and no one says anything apart from people like me and you, David Duke, and a few others. Now, they criticize Israel, but they make sure they make a distinction. Now, we're not talking about Jews. Now, Jews are obviously not Israel, and a lot of, you know, Jews are very kind. And well, really what you see is this sort of internal squabble within Jewry between, you know, people, Judaism and, you know, goody-two-shoes Jews and these evil Zionists that we spoke about the last time. But no one talks about, well, depending on, you know, if you look at their own writings, depending on who the audience is, they'll either take credit for mass immigration or they'll condemn you for being an anti-Semite if you criticize them. Just depends the audience. In their own writings, they have, you know, articulated their role in mass immigration, and they're proud of it. They think it's a good thing. So, you know, I don't think there's any evidence for this paranoia. I mean, they've been, in the last century, they've been running amok in a way that is just unparalleled in their history. It doesn't mean they have had power in their history, but, I mean, the last century, it's no exaggeration to call it the Jewish century, I think.
Right, yeah. And they do call it, I mean, I've seen that. I've seen it called, you know, the 20th century being called the Jewish century in their own writings. Okay, a couple of points, quick points. One, you said, you know, they're always talking about another Hitler. So I have a Jewish friend from college 50 years, 45 years ago. And every now and then he just writes me some one-line email message, and I'll reply. And I don't reveal myself too much to him. He wrote me, I'm sure, obviously in regards to Trump, we've literally elected Hitler. And so I just write back to him, Hitler had better hair, which I think is funny. And then he approved. He approved. Okay. Then there's.
That's funny. Sorry, I was chuckling there, but I'm going mute. But yeah, that is.
Yeah. So, you know, people going to go compare him to Hitler. I think
Hitler maybe edged on orator skills. Maybe, you know, it's close, but you know, I edged.
Who was it? Okay, there was the owner of the Cincinnati Reds baseball team, which is a team that goes back to 1869. It's the oldest professional baseball team in the world. And her name was Marge Schott, or Schott. And back in the 1980s, she was making some she said something like, well, everybody knows Hitler was good at first. You know, he built the highways, he got country. Everybody knows he was good at first. She compared Jesse Jackson to Hitler, but in a favorable way, because he had charisma and was a good speaker. And, you know, Hitler was a charismatic speaker, and there aren't that many people. Now, Trump, I don't even think he's necessarily a charismatic speaker. He's kind of funny. And, you know, he's kind of funny. Is he exactly charismatic? Because, like, Jesse Jackson back in the 80s, and I went to Jesse Jackson rallies and speeches, and he could get the audience crying. Yeah, I mean, he was powerful. He was a minister. This is what ministers do, especially in black churches. And, you know, Hitler was a very powerful speaker. Okay, one last thing I want to say before I kick it back to you. Joel Stein, you know, you mentioned like this was a Jewish century. They're running amok. They're so worried about anti-Semitism. But Joel Stein, who wrote the famous article, Jews run Hollywood, and all I care is that we get to keep running it. Or I can't remember the title of the article. That's how it ended. Is all I care is how we get this. So we get to keep running it. But he had written at the beginning of the article, I think it was the beginning of that article, maybe it was a different article he wrote, but I'm pretty sure it was that article. Joel Stein from the Los Angeles Times wrote that he had grown up in what he called a pro-Semitic bubble. He says, you know, maybe he doesn't know about the rest of the country, but New York, New Jersey, California is a pro-Semitic bubble. And, you know, you look at a lot of the other parts of the country where they keep electing the judge had a reference to Nancy Mace, who's a representative from South Carolina. And he said, I didn't know the donor class had power in South Carolina, which was kind of a stupid thing to say, but she was being, she was in a confrontation with Madea Benjamin from Code Pink, whom I've met before. And Representative Mace was saying how she supports the Jews everywhere, even Jews like you who are self-hating wretches or whatever it was she said. Anyway, I'll kick it back to you, Paul.
Yeah, well, that's what you get, isn't it? I mean, that woman you're talking about accused the other Jewish woman as, you know, being a – that's what they do whenever anybody – who's a Jew criticizes Israel, they call him a self-hating Jew. Now the type of language that good Jew was using, she would probably use that same kind of language for, you know, white people as well, I imagine, because it was very, you know, you're an extremist, you're racist, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and that is true, of course, of Smotrich and Ben-Gavir and those guys. I mean, they are, but it's still very much that kind of, you know, they don't like Israel, but, you know, normally people like that, we don't agree with them on anything. They'll be pro-immigration, you know, pro-abortion, you know, your typical sort of social justice warrior type that we've been, you know, dealing with in the culture war. Yeah, I don't know that for sure, but I imagine that's her position. That, you know, she would probably call any white nationalist, you know, Hitler as well. I mean, it's just
well, the, what? Mm-hmm. I will say about her
because we agree on the Israel thing. I don't know the woman, but I imagine she would probably. We've got nothing in common with her and her people like her, except the atrocities, you know, that we acknowledge, you know, with Israel and Palestine.
So, like I said, I've met her, I've spoken to her. My mother knew her. My mother was actually in Code Pink, and Code Pink is the group that Madia Benjamin founded. And I would not be surprised if her feelings on all these issues you mentioned are as you described. But what I will say about her is 99% of her energy is expended towards opposing war. That's she is a peace activist. She's not a left wing activist. You know, she's not a immigration activist or a gay rights activist. She is war and peace. That's what she does. That's what the Code Pink group does. They go into the congressional hearings wearing pink, and they disrupt them. And so you know, honestly, what she thinks in her spare time, I'm not too concerned with, because what she does in her actions, it's all anti-war stuff. So I give her credit for that. But yeah, she probably does hold the positions that you're talking about. It's just that she doesn't have time to, you know, she doesn't bother acting out on them. And I think that's important, you know. People can have their positions, but what do they expend their energy on? Because I've also seen, you know, like Jews who say, "Oh yeah, I'm against wokeism or whatever." But you know, but I guess like maybe a Ben Shapiro type person, he's against wokeism, he's against certain things. But what does he spend his energy on? He spends his energy on Jewish supremacy, on support for Israel. So, yeah. There was something I wanted to ask you. Did you see the beginning of the Here Comes the Judge latest interview with Philip Giraldi?
I watched it yesterday, but what was the part you were alluding to?
It was the very first question the judge asked, where he asked the question about the donor class, which is a euphemism I'm getting sick of. But what he did is he defined the donor class. The donor class meaning rich Jewish people who dominate, or I don't know if he said dominate or control or run the media and academia and campaign finance. And that's like, wow, that's for the judge. That was a pretty base premise to a question.
Well, who was he talking to, though? Because the judge does tailor
his... Philip Giraldi.
Yeah, exactly. So he knows that... and you never know what Giraldi might be saying to him off air. He might be going even harder. When the judge has a certain... It's like when he has Larry Wilkerson on, he switches to Noam Chomsky's view of Israel. But anyway,
yeah.
You know, the judge is very... you can't call it sycophantic, but one of the reasons he gets on my nerve is because he's so over the top nice to his guests. Thank you very much for your amazing insight. I mean, I've never met anyone with such courage and intelligence and insight in all my life. In fact, you know, well, they can't all be the most brilliant and most insightful. I mean, you know, he's so, it's just over the top. It's just like, and so he likes to agree with everyone. He likes to be warm and fuzzy with everyone. No.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less valuable its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar, has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
It's just over the top. It's just like, and so he likes to agree with everyone. He likes to be warm and fuzzy with everyone. I don't dislike the guy necessarily, but it's just over the top. I mean, everybody's just the most amazing, beautiful human being.
Well, the thing about Napolitano is, I guess I've been aware of him probably since around 2008 presidential campaign. He was kind of in Ron Paul's orbit, and he was a pretty mainstream libertarian. And the libertarians, if you go back to the aughts, the libertarians, they were anti-war, and war was a big deal because we had 2 pretty active wars going on in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And so And the libertarians were one of the few so-called right-wing groups that was involved in anti-war. The anti-war movement against Iraq was, I guess, what I grew up thinking was more traditional. It was, you know, it was based in either the Democratic Party or people who were to the left of the Democrats. And that's what I was used to from, you know, the Vietnam War. Now, early Vietnam War, the early and middle Vietnam War is under Johnson, who was a Democrat. But there had been a domination of Republican presidents, or, you know, from 1969 when Nixon was elected until for the next, 40 years until Barack Obama was elected. You had 28 years of Republican presidents, 12 years of Democrat presidents, and there was a lot more war during the Republican presidents. And so what I came to realize was a big hunk of the anti-war movement really wasn't even principled anti-war. It was just anti-Bush or anti-Nixon, or, you know, things weren't, well, you know, Reagan wasn't really doing war so much, but he was doing arms buildups. And then when it got to Obama, and Obama's doing the exact same stuff, everything fizzled out, and you didn't have an anti-war movement anymore, except for, you know, there was a little bit of embers burning in the libertarian movement. That, you know, there really wasn't much left. But, I know Napolitano from, say, 15, 16, 17 years ago, and I will say that he's at least he's made himself into a platform for people who are pretty sincerely anti-war, and it's a pretty good platform. So I've got an appreciation for him as having moved in basically a positive direction. I'll say that about him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we criticize him, it's within the context of, you know, fundamentally one of the good guys, really, you know. And then we sort of, we air our frustration within that context.
Well, and part of the reason he's annoying is because we have to watch him so much, because that he is a platform for a lot of good information and okay analysis. The analysis, with the exception of Giraldi and Colonel McGregor, it really doesn't take into enough account Jewish power. But, you know, it's pretty good. You know, I mean, even Aaron Maté and Blumenthal, they're a little more open about Jewish power, but you know, even then, it's not really Jewish, it's Zionist or something like that. And, the problem is it goes way beyond Zionism.
Oh, of course. I'll just play that clip for the audience so they know what we're talking about here.
Please,
for a second. Hold on 1 second.
Now here for Judging Freedom. Today is Wednesday, April 30th, 2025. Bill Giraldi joins us now. Phil, it's always a pleasure. How did the donor class, basically very wealthy American Jews, acquire such a stranglehold on the presidency, the Congress, the banks, media, and academia?
Well, he's getting a little bit too close to the bone there for his channel. Are you there, Patrick?
Premise of a question. It wasn't even, do they have a lot of control? It's like, how did they get all this control? How did they get, well, he's the term stranglehold. How did they get this stranglehold? How did rich American Jews get this stranglehold over the presidency, Congress, academia, the media and banking?
Hollywood.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, that goes way beyond anything to do with the state of Israel.
That goes way beyond what you would think is even allowed on YouTube, frankly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, he's getting a little bit close to the bone there if he wants his, you know, for the survival of his channel to say something like that.
I'm wondering about this. The gold. Who are the gold people? What is it? Lear Capital? Is that his gold people? I don't want to advertise for them, but he's always talking about gold.
Protect your wealth.
Protect your wealth. Hey, if you're going to protect your wealth with AU, not BS, because the only gold I want is in my back pocket. At least they sponsor RBN.
Yeah.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth. Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The Civil War was a bitter and brutal conflict, but perhaps never more so than in the state of Missouri, where the wounds of the Kansas Border War still festered. The inhumanity of the conflict was punctuated with Union war crimes, especially in the eastern Ozarks. There, civilians were targeted in an effort to subjugate the fierce fighting men battling Union forces of the region. As a result of this policy, 27,000 Missouri citizens were killed during the war. Best-selling author Paulette Giles had this to say about Blood in the Ozarks. There are a great many books on the guerrillas in Missouri during the Civil War, and almost all of them have to do with the bushwhackers in central Missouri. Quantrell, Frank and Jesse James, Bloody Bill Anderson, and others. Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy is a much-needed look at the war in southeast Missouri. Purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks at foothillsmedia.net. That's foothillsmedia.net to purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Protect your wealth. Hey, if you're going to protect your wealth with AU, not BS, because the only gold I want is in my back pocket. At least they sponsor RBN. Okay.
Yeah.
Catamaran. But... Is it Catamaran Capital? What, Catamaran something? I don't know. I hear the commercials all the time, and I can't even remember. But, yeah, don't go to Lear. Don't go. Don't tell them the judge sent you. Tell them the crazy professor sent you.
Okay. So anyway, I don't know whether we should listen to Giraldi's answer here.
Go ahead. Go. It was okay. I mean, Giraldi, the thing is, Giraldi's been on your show. Giraldi's been on RBN. Giraldi does go a lot further than even further than Colonel McGregor. He goes the furthest out of all of the people on that on the guest list.
I wonder.
It's not too surprising.
I wonder why he didn't come back on my show, though. He only came on once.
You know, my mother knew him too. My mother, who passed away years ago, she knew some of these people because she was a lifetime peace activist, and she would go to. She would go to Washington, D.C. or other places and go to these events and seminars and things and wound up meeting a lot of these people.
Yeah. Well, because of a lot of, like I said, because it has been the Jewish century and because of the narrative, you know, not only do these people have no reason to be, you know, suspecting the Gentiles, but, you know, the Gentiles, the non-Jews go out of their way to please the Jews, and to the extent that when people like, you know, when you know, confronted with people like us who talk about it, Jewish power, and I think we articulate it reasonably well, you know, we are, people like us are kind of dismissed as over-the-top crazy people, you know, so people don't want to be associated with you. So it kind of really narrows down who you can interview, because even someone like Giraldi might look at what you're saying and don't really want to go there to that extent, you know. But there's nothing we're saying that's not true. You know, it's just that the culture and the climate is such that any real criticism of Jewry is met with fear and, you know, a desire for people to distance themselves. You know, it's just this hypersensitivity around the issue, you know. Far from Jews having a reason to be paranoid, you know, they've created such fear and such a culture of pro-Jew. You know, okay, it's sort of crumbling with Israel, which is amazing, you know, because considering it took a genocide for that to happen. But you still have people defending Israel. But yeah, it's the whole climate.
Is it for fear of the Jews?
It's for fear of the Jews. It's exactly that. That's what it is. And that term was used quite a lot in the New Testament when the early Christians, who were also Jews, for fear of the Jews, they sort of recognized them as this entity. So, you know, you have this love in with Jews in the church, which is not normal. I'm not suggesting everyone should go around condemning, you know, everybody just because they're a Jew, you know, but we have to look at them as a collective and what they're involved in, and they're certainly not pro-Christian for the most part. And you have this very pro-Jew thing going on within Christianity today, you know, partly because of the state of Israel and this nonsense about, you know, the return, you know, when it comes to end time stuff and eschatology and all that. But also part of it, the church is just, it lives in fear of the Jews too. So no criticism is allowed, because it's just, automatically you're an anti-Semite, blah, blah, blah.
But I'm going to invoke one more time, do unto others as, or the Jews, do unto others as they imagine others would do unto them. And when you mix that mindset with paranoia, it's really, really, and then mix in some, you know, financial and other power. That's dangerous. And, you know, the paranoia, one of the ingredients of the paranoia is the whole Holocaust narrative. And I think there should be a moratorium on invocation of the Holocaust until there is free historical inquiry into it. And I don't know exactly what happened. What I do know, and, you know, I'm like, World War II, was it like 70, at least 70 million people died? Jews were, I'm sure lots of Jews died. They were major belligerents in these events of the first half of the 20th century. They were major belligerents. And so if at one point or another during the first half of the 20th century, they took large casualties, well, that needs to be put in context. And so I'm always saying that the Holocaust narrative, it is exaggerated to an extent. I'd like to know exactly how much. It is embellished. We know there's been a lot of things that had to be retracted, and it's decontextualized. You're not allowed to put it in context. But there is a context. The Jews were playing hardball in the decades leading up to World War II. They were playing hardball. You know, you can look at the Bolshevik Revolution. You can look at the Holodomor. You can look at a lot of things. You can look at the Jewish Bund in Poland, which never took power. But you can look at Bolshevik parties in Bavaria, in Hungary, that did at least briefly take power. they were playing hardball. And there was reason that in Central and Eastern Europe, there was fear of the Jews. So I'm just throwing that out there. The Holocaust narrative should not be perpetuated by people on the Judge's Show, by Scott Ritter. And it should not be invoked. There's got to be, if there's not going to be historical freedom of historical inquiry into it, then nobody should be invoking it. It's, you know, because it feeds into their paranoia. And that paranoia, when you've got a mindset of do unto others as you imagine they would do unto you, then you get exactly what you see from the State of Israel. That's my line, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, but also, it's paranoia to an extent. But obviously, they have a history of, in quotes, being persecuted, which is essentially they get a reaction eventually because of their behavior. Now, they ignore all their behavior, and they just look at the reaction. It's just like even with the State of Israel, I mean, that the history starts when someone attacks them. There's nothing that's actually gone before that that has any relevance to them. And they just kind of ignore everything they do. And then when they get a reaction, it's the latest chapter of anti-Semitism, and their victim narrative continues. But even in the last century, to some extent, they have good reason to be scared, because, you know, they know what they're doing. You know, they're very twisted in certain ways where, like I said, they always sort of present themselves as victims. But the more destruction they cause and the more abuse they perpetrate, and they have done more of that in the last century than, you know, the last 10 centuries combined, I would say, you know, the more preoccupied to the point of obsession they are with censoring everybody and, you know, legislating for anti-Semitism for their own protection, because they know, and they're like, okay, we need to legislate here. We need to get it into law, anti-Semitism. So they get very aggressive. So the more aggressive they are, the more people they kill, the more abuse they perpetrate, you're going to have that. You're going to have a parallel increase in suppression of any resistance to it. So then they create this pressure cooker that builds up and builds up and builds up and builds up and builds up. And then eventually, when it's bad enough, then they'll get a reaction. And the reaction is always, you know, it's like a coiled spring, because they've been suppressing it for so long that when it's like a guy, like somebody who's just been abusing their wife or their partner for years and years and years, well, maybe at one point, if it wasn't so bad, your wife would have just left you. But now she's going to murder you in your sleep or blow your head off with a double-barrel shotgun, you know?
You're absolutely right, Alex. You're absolutely right. No, but you are. I mean, that's extremely well said. This is the dynamic. They, at some level, know they're scheming of the Goyim, and because they know they have at some level understanding of their scheming of the Goyim and their screwing of the Goyim, they know that if the Goyim understood it, that there would be a reaction, and so they get more ruthless in order to suppress any discussion or dissemination of knowledge about how they're screwing the Goyim. And the more ruthless they get, then of course the more they have to worry about, and the more they have to suppress, and you do get this vicious cycle that you're talking about, until there's a pressure cooker, and I don't want to see them get murdered in their sleep. A divorce, walking out on them, and maybe taking the kids with us. Yeah, that might be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, you know, as I say, they create that pressure cooker, and then the reaction is like, you know, when, you know, even if you red pill somebody on Jewish power, I mean, they go crazy for about a year or so. you know, it just with outrage at their schemings when they become aware of them, and they become aware of the depth of it and the effect it has on their own mindset and their own worldview and the world they've been brought up in. And,
every aspect of their lives, you know, financially, the media, Hollywood, everything has been affected by these people and their agenda. So then you get people, you know, what's his name? It's a black fella you talk about sometimes. You get that kind of
Kanye reaction. West.
You get people like Kanye, which is a normal reaction at first before people sort of simmer down a little bit. But the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior, and so I guess this drama will just play out again. They know what they're doing, and you know, even though they can act the victims, they also know what they're doing, which is why they, you know, they become obsessed with suppressing everybody so that they can do what they do. So, you know, with an attempt to do it with impunity to protect themselves.
You know, at some level, when we say they, as individuals, they know what's going on. At some levels, they don't know what's going on. And at some levels, they're maybe the masters of self-deception. That, you know, they might be able to sincerely convince themselves that they're performing Takum Alom or healing the world.
Well, people like Mike Blumenthal indulge in that sort of stuff. That's why they say, oh, you know, to Ben-Gavir and these Zionist extremists, they say, you're distorting our religion because they have that Tekel Elum, or whatever it's called, forget exactly how you pronounce it. But that is a thread within Judaism. So you'll have these Jews who are, you know, go out of their way to do good things. But, you know, that ideology is basically, they have self-appointed themselves to be the light of the world. You know, on what authority? Our authority. You know, it's not based on any higher authority. I don't, as far as I understand it. I mean, it's just a Jewish thing where they want to do good, as they see good. You know, they define what good is. I mean, we can all define what we think is good. But ultimately, for me anyway, I need a higher authority, because otherwise everybody's just, there's a lot of people in the world and lots of people with different ideas about what's good and what's not good. I mean, I think abortion's evil, but some people think that's a good thing. Some people think that to criticize homosexuality and to call it a sin is evil. Bible says that it's a sin, you know, so, you know, I think that doctrine they have of Tikkai Elum or whatever it's called, it's basically, you know, the Jews to save the world and to be a light to the world. But no one asked him for that. That's just a self-appointed thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they go around acting it out in all sorts of different ways and in aggressive ways, you know, which, you know, it's not just something they do privately. It is launched into the wider culture.
If Jewish power were completely factored out of the human equations one way or another, right? If it just wasn't an issue, there would still be problems on Earth. There would still be conflict. There would still be war. But
I dare say a lot less of it.
But yeah, I mean, when we look around and we see what's actually going on, the most immediate dangers, the biggest dangers, for the most part, stem from Jewish group behavior. So
you mentioned this. It is a very important aspect, I think, that you mentioned. I think it's particularly strong in, you know, Jewry and these Zionist guys who are crazy. The idea of self-deception, you know, that is a serious spiritual problem. You know, that, because that is essentially, you're not living in reality, you're not living in truth, you know, but they convince themselves of all sorts of things and they choose to live in a reality of their own choosing very conveniently. But, you know, that is a serious spiritual problem. You know, the scriptures say the heart is, what does it say? There's something, I forget the passage, but it says the heart is wicked and deceitful above all things. You know, who can know it? Because we're all guilty of that to some extent. You know, we all have moments of that where we, you know, we live in our own version of reality because it's convenient that way. But it doesn't always mean it lines up with the truth of the situation. But these people take it to a whole different level, you know, and it's pretty much incessant with them. It's a kind of a constant state of being, you know.
indeed. Okay, we just have a few minutes left. You were saying something before we started about some sort of spiritual analysis.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just saying, you know, I have, in the last sort of couple of weeks, I've probably been more spiritually aggressive and, you know, attentive than I have been in a good while. And, you know, lots of praying and other spiritual tools that are available. And none of my prayers were answered. And in fact, over the last week, well, none of them have been answered yet anyway. And in fact, over the last week, you know, a whole lot of things have gone wrong. So in one sense, you know, it's almost ironic, but at the same time,
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what Wayne has to say.
Extendivite. I have been taking it for about 2 years, and I had really bad heart palpitations. And since I've been taking it, I don't have any major episodes at all anymore. I'm 76 years old, and I still play competitive basketball. Well, of course, I've taken care of myself really good since I was 60, but Extendivite really helped the blood pressure, really helped the... I used to get really bad episodes of heart palpitations, just skipping beats and double beats. But also, I wanted to tell you that I really appreciate your broadcast. They're just really refreshing.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these 5 easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your 5 easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our 5 easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
In fact, over the last week, you know, a whole lot of things have gone wrong. So in one sense, you know, it's almost ironic, but at the same time, you know, the closer you come to God, the harder the devil will work against you. And sometimes you experience that, you know, and it's kind of it can be discouraging. For whatever reason, the Lord allows it, maybe so that you persist, or maybe he's just a little test of your faith rather than just answering your prayers immediately or whatever. But yeah, it can be discouraging. I don't know, well, you know, for anybody out there who's experiencing it, I would just say keep on. You just have to persist. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of, in one sense, it's ironic because, you know, I've been very spiritually aggressive over the last couple of weeks. And it's just like, not only were my prayers not answered, but just bad stuff has happened, you know? So, you know, but I remember there's a guy I know, Steve Gregg, who's a Bible teacher, you know, and he will, you know, he talks about, when he's talking about prayer, you know, some people say, you know, well, you know, prayer might not really change anything, but it makes you feel good. And it's, you know, it's a warm and fuzzy thing. But as he put it, you know, prayer is wrestling. You know, we can't see the spiritual realm, but when you, I've seen that happen before in different ways. When you become, you know, spiritually active, you need to, you also need to be like, you know, have protection, because you can feel that spirit around. It can work through other people. It can work through different circumstances where just bad stuff happens, you know? And you need to be prepared for that, you know, because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't always work out the way you want. But anyway, I've been going through that over the last sort of week or so, you know, but quite a few little weird things have just happened in a bad way, but which you kind of, you know, took me by surprise in a way, but I guess I shouldn't be, because, you know, it's part of the battle. But it can be discouraging, but I think that the key to it is not allow yourself to be discouraging. So for anybody out there, thought it would be worth mentioning if anybody's going through, because it, ironically, other times when you're not being, you know, walking in the spirit properly, you know, things can also be okay. So you kind of get a certain protection at times when you're vulnerable, you know. So it's, I guess there's an irony there at times. It is somewhat perplexing, the spiritual warfare environment. So, because we don't always know what's going on, you see, because we can't see it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah. That was
Well, that's interesting. Okay, I guess we're about
it is tiring too. It's like, it's not, you know, you're not physically fighting someone, but spiritual warfare is tiring. It really is. It's like I said, you're not getting punched in the face, but, you know, it's spiritually tiring.
Yeah. Well, okay. I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Patrick. It's a pleasure as always.
Okay. And I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you, and I'm wondering what it is I should do. It's so hard to keep the smile from my face, losing control. Yeah, I'm all over the place. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. When you started out with nothing and you found out you're a selfish man, and your family all go.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.